Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to the Missing and Unexplained podcast. I want to give a special shout out and thanks to those of you who have already subscribed to the Patreon. Specifically, I want to thank Jeff France, Kate Bond, Kathy Tarr, Debbie Hooper, thanks Mom, Bill Curry, Donna WK, Sean Satin, Jeanette Reed, and the wonderful Molly Reed. Thank you, all of you, for your monthly support. For those of you who haven't stopped by the Patreon, head over there and check it out. You'll get early access to content as well as exclusive content for as little as $3 a month. You'll also have first access to the trailer for Season 2 on the disappearance of Chris Fowler. The trailer's coming soon, so keep your ears peeled for that. Today I have a dynamic duo on the show. They are Caitlin and Graham, the hosts of the True North True Crime podcast. True North True Crime is a podcast that brings awareness to missing persons and victims of violent crimes in Canada. I have to say, I was already a huge fan of them before this interview, and after getting to know these two wonderful hosts, I'm a super fan. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Caitlin and Graham. Thank you for coming on the show today. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
No problem. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having us.
No, it's really my pleasure. I've been a fan of True North True Crime since it came out. And so I want to start right from the beginning. I mean, what was the inspiration behind starting this podcast? And for those of those people out there who might not know, when did you start the podcast?
So we started the podcast. I believe we put out our trailer episode on May 31st, 2020. And the inspiration for the podcast, like as we are a couple, and one of the things that we actually bonded over when we initially met was that we both consumed a lot of true crime. We both consumed a lot of podcasts of varying degrees, and it's something that we really bonded over. And it's has become something we're both very passionate about. And then we originally were thinking about launching a podcast in 2016 or 2017.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we both got busy with life, et cetera. And then, but it was always burning in the back of our mind that we wanted to do this podcast. And then the pandemic hit in March of 2020. And we both work in the film industry. And we both found ourselves and in the performing arts, we both found ourselves without work and lots of time on our hands. And I think us, like millions of other people across North America, started a podcast. And so that was sort of like the initial structuring of how it happened. But we really sat down and had some very serious conversations about what we wanted the podcast to be. And we knew in our hearts that we wanted to follow the mantra of do no harm, which is primum non nocere, which is from the Hippocratic Oath. Like, we didn't want to create more harm with our podcast by covering these stories, which to us meant that we needed to have values and ethics. And so we wanted to find a voice for the podcast that wasn't entertainment, you know, like some of the true crime stuff out there, we wanted to make sure that we were telling people stories in a compassionate and empathetic and caring way.
Yeah, I think I feel the exact same way. I think going into it, we had a lot of the same taste in podcasts. We really like Case File because there's no, can I swear? There's no bullshit. He just tells a story. There's no bullshit with Case File. He just tells a story. There's no extra his, you know, point of view. And we try, I mean, like, I know people like to hear opinions of podcasters on occasion. For me, I don't mind if it's peppered in here and there, but I don't need you going on a tangent for 20 minutes of the podcast. So there's been this kind of balance with, let's just tell a story here and there. If we absolutely have to say something or we absolutely feel the need to say something, we'll do so. But like Case File, Generation Y, mm-hmm. Were really big inspirations for us. Unresolved, The Vanished.
Canadian True Crime.
Yep. Yeah. All of them, they were big inspirations for us. We love the way that they tell stories and they cover this genre that can be so difficult to talk about. And we've kind of, as a society, I think, become almost desensitized to these stories. And we don't think about it as these are real people who mm-hmm. have dealt with horrific violence in their lives. And it's almost like, ooh, I want to hear my scary story. And it's almost like fictionalized to some people. And we wanted to really steer away from that and
humanize people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you've done a excellent job of that. I knew from the first few episodes I listened to of your show that you were doing exactly what I wanted to do with the Missing and Unexplained was I wanted to first and foremost bring these cases, you know, to the forefront so that people could be aware of them, but also humanize these people, because I think a lot of the time in these other shows and programs, they get turned into sensationalism or a statistic or something that is not as tangible as an actual person.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, especially with missing persons, I find is very difficult. And I can't imagine being a family member or friend, listening mm-hmm. to a show and having, you know, your loved one talked about like that. So yeah. One of the things that your show, has been really praised for is how compassionate you are in your approach. And you know, you kind of already answered my question about how cognizant were you of this when you started, but was there a debate between you two or maybe internally about, you know, obviously we want the podcast to do well, but we want to mm-hmm. stick to our mandate. Like, was there ever, any thoughts about, are we going to have to sacrifice our content for entertainment value or anything like that?
No, I think a lot of people actually do want these stories to be told this way. I think for like, if I'm listening to a podcast and there's laughing or, you know, shitting on a person for having maybe
addiction issues or mental health
exactly,
issues.
Exactly. Yeah. And that kind of stuff. I'll turn off a podcast. I don't need to sit there and, you know, hear you talk about somebody in that way. And I think that there are a lot of people who want these stories to be told in a compassionate way. And so they can actually connect with the person and maybe feel the pain that they were going through at the time where something bad happened to them. I don't think it was ever really a conversation. I mean, of course, I would love to be able to be more crass and outgoing. I'm a very outgoing person. I have to be very subdued on the podcast. But I think if I wanted to be more big and personal on my podcast, don't cover true crime.
Yeah, like my background is comedy. I did comedy for 20 years, and when people in the comedy community or people who've known me for years find out that this is my podcast and they listen to it, they're like, this isn't funny at all. And I'm like, yeah, no, it's not at all, because I'm a multifaceted person with many different angles to how I approach life. And this is stuff that I take very seriously. But one thing I will say is the thing we have sacrificed, by covering the cases the way that we do, is that we don't name any of our episodes after people who committed crimes. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, in the broad landscape of media, people will know Robert Picton or Clifford Olson, but they will not know the people who were victims. And so we will get requests like, hey, please do this serial killer case. And my whole angle is, how do I cover that case victim-centered when the majority of those of the 58 people that Robert Picton was alleged to have killed, their names aren't widely known, but his is. And so here's the thing is, because our podcasts are named after missing people or people who are victims of crime, I would guarantee we don't get as many downloads as if we had done an episode called Robert Picton. If we did a six part episode on Robert Picton, called it Robert Picton, I bet you we'd get tons of downloads on it, like more than we do with the podcast right now. But that's one of those things that we're willing to sacrifice, is to not glorify a murderer, but rather to humanize a victim.
That's incredible. I mean, that's so well said. And that's exactly how I feel. Like, I approach this podcast with zero expectations other than that. I really wanted to dabble with missing persons narrative in a really respectful, humanizing way. And if it got 100 downloads or 1,000, it didn't matter. It was like, I want to do this right, and I want to do it my way. And, you know, I think you have to, like, you have to at the beginning establish, like, hey, we're not going to compromise, you know, our core beliefs and mandate for this podcast, you know, because of what might get more clicks or downloads. And I love that you're not willing to put those names out there, because let's be honest too, like, a lot of those, the Robert Pictons and all the other, you know, notoriety of other serial killers, like, everyone kind of knows who they are anyway. So to me, it's more important to, bring these missing persons or these victims forward and put them at the forefront of the podcast. And I'm even struggling with now, like, you know, my first series was Ryan Stuka. And I mean, that's not that's not a niche case. Like, that's really popular, especially here in BC. So with this second season, I think I'm doing something that's maybe a little less known in the media. And I'd like to continue that trend because, those are the people that need us, right? Those are the ones that need us to come forward and to do a series and to talk about them. And with your format, you get to cover so many cases at once. And I'm wondering, like, when you're thinking about covering your next case, like, how much thought are you putting in how you're choosing it? Like, is it based on, you know, how popular it is? Is it based on geography? Like, how do you go about that selection process?
Yeah. So we actually literally, both of us, have in our notes on our phones a list of cases that we're like, hey, we'd like to get to these eventually. For me, I'd really love to cover Bruce MacArthur, who killed a bunch of men, gay men in the Toronto area. But again, it's really hard to do because he had 6-7 victims. How do you title that, right? Because I don't want to use his name. Again, they never deserve their name to be known. So, but going from that is, we try not to cover cases from the same provinces over and over again. I know we do a lot of BC, but that's just because that's where we are. But if we're doing a lot of BC, we might jump over to the East Coast or the prairies or even the territories. We try to jump around a lot so we make sure that all of the country is covered and they feel like we care. But, you know, our next episode is actually going to be Trina Hunt, who, is the woman from Port Moody who went missing, and her remains were just
identified
and announced that she was indeed a victim of homicide. And so, obviously,
this started as a missing person. Like, we already had this script kind of ready to go as a tool to find a missing person, and now we've had to
pivot,
quickly change gears. Yeah,
but I mean, you know, I really want to quickly tell that story because obviously people are demanding answers, and they don't really know where to get good information and a complete storyline. So I feel that's important to get out quickly. And then, of course, because we're going to get updates, hopefully quickly with that case, we'll do some TNTC shorts with updates on that case as well.
Yeah. And so there's a few factors we look at. Like Kate just said, we do look at the country as a whole. So, you know, I know we do a lot of BC cases, but we also are trying to to make sure that we're reaching across the country in different ways. But then we also want to make sure that we are providing good representation and diversity of the people that we cover, because, and this is as a man, what breaks my heart the most is that when I go through those BC court documents and the Supreme Court documents throughout Canada, Canadians, writ large, murder each other in the drug industry, or it is men murdering their ex-girlfriends, their ex-wives, their wives, or their children, and it's the amount of femicide that is occurring is absolutely heartbreaking. We could do an episode every single week that would be a woman who was murdered by a man, and so and that's the truth. But I also want to make sure that we're covering a diversity of cases, like a diverse portfolio of cases. Like, we covered Tech Wang in Edmonton, and he was actually a victim of domestic intimate partner violence from his wife. So I found that was a unique case that we wanted to cover to help audiences to see the diverse nature that is out there in missing persons and violent crime cases, even though the lion's share seems to be these, I think it's like 60% of, yeah. of violent crimes or something like that, or towards women. So, you know, we're trying to diversify the stories that we tell. So that's the challenge. So across the country and then across different socioeconomic backgrounds.
Yeah. And it's really interesting you brought that up, because that's something mm-hmm. I am currently, I wouldn't say struggling with, but I'm being really cognizant of, because my first season was about a white male. My second season is now going to be a white male. And there was no, I didn't do that on purpose. It was just kind of mm-hmm. like, these were the two cases that I was already kind of working on and already doing interviews. And then I, you know, kind of had a moment not too long ago where I was like, you know, this isn't really a good representation of all the types of people that go missing. And so, you know, having, you know, sometimes 6 months in between my series, for my third season, I'm already thinking about, you know, those factors and, you know, maybe incorporating, you know, a wider theme about missing persons into that. So, mm-hmm. I'm really glad you said that, because, I mean, it's probably a little easier for a show like yours where you can do that on a weekly basis. Yeah. But for me, it's like when I might only have two seasons a year, I'm really going to have to be careful going forward that, you know, I do, represent all kind of demographics and, you know, parts of society, because yeah, they all matter. And like you said, there are certain parts of society that are at greater risk, to these violent crimes and to go missing. And, you know, that's something that I need to be more cognizant of going forward. But I think this is also a learning process. Like, I've found that I've learned a lot about just podcasting and doing this type of reporting and research. And I'm wondering, in terms of the missing persons cases you've covered, do you find any unique challenges when you're like, okay, we're going to cover this case, this is how we're going to go about it? Like, is there a reoccurring challenge you're starting to see for yourself when it comes to, you know, covering these missing persons?
Hello, nerds. Come listen to the History Nerds United podcast and let's make history fun again. We interview today's best authors, whether they are established Pulitzer Prize winners or someone debuting their first book. Let us show you that history is not a boring class you took in high school, but a place where the best stories come from. And we don't just cover history. We also love to chat about true crime, biographies, memoirs, and so much more. So head on over to History Nerds United and let us introduce you to your new favorite book and learn the story behind the story.
History.
Yeah, I just want to go back and say it's don't feel bad that like both of your cases have happened to be white males. Like I don't think that's necessarily an issue, especially because a lot of the times I don't think audiences always realize some of these cases find us. Like some of these families 100%. Actually find us and reach yeah. out, and then you feel absolutely compelled. You're like, of course I will cover this case. I mean, what are you going to do? Turn away a family that is mourning? And I mean, all stories, regardless of who it is that went missing or unfortunately got murdered, they deserve to be told.
Yeah.
So I'll let Graham take your question that you just asked.
Well, actually, I wanted to just say too, like, I really appreciate that. And, yeah. and it was funny. One of the things, well, it's not funny, but it was funny to me afterwards thinking about it, because I was struggling with that. And then for the Ryan case, I talked to an RCMP officer, was like, well, where she is in BC, her district, she's like, most of the people that go missing are white males. She's like, mm-hmm. and yeah. she said by like an alarming number, it was like 70% or something like that. I mean, don't quote me on it. It's in the episode that I did about it. But to me, that was like, okay, well, that, you know, that provides yeah. some context for this case. And so after I, you know, cover, you know, Chris Fowler, you know, that's, like I said, my third season, I am going to be more cognizant and move on. But, mm-hmm. but yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that, because it was definitely more of like, oh, these people reached out to me, or, you know, these stories found me, and I just felt totally. Compelled to tell them.
Totally. It yeah. happens a lot. People reach out all the time. And I mean, you kind of got to say, all right, I had this in mind, but we're going to go this yeah. way now. So
yeah. Like when Chelsea Portman went missing, in Vancouver, we shuffled episodes around to make sure we got that episode out as fast as possible. Like sometimes we will just literally put a pin in or shelf an episode when there's an urgent case coming up. And, you know, Chelsea went missing on Labor Day weekend in 2020. But really, the amount of media attention she began to get wasn't until January mm-hmm. of 2021. And we reached out to Sheila, her mother, and said, hey, can we help you out? Like, do you mind if we put together an episode? And then I was able to put that episode together in 5 days. recorded and out, because I just sent her a questionnaire. I didn't even do a phone interview. I just said, you know, if you want to answer these questions, we can get a story, and I'll do my own due diligence on background research, and then we'll put something together. And we managed to get that one out very quickly. So like always willing to pivot when something else arises, like this week with you know, we were out for a hike last week when our phones went off and we found out that, you know, Trina Hunt had been identified. And, you know, we immediately just stopped and we're like, you know, do we still cover this case, you know?
So I guess going back to the my question that kind of got completely overridden by our talk about picking cases. But I guess that's kind of got to be a challenge then, is like prioritizing what you need to put out based on urgency, timeliness. Like, is that something that you're constantly struggling with? Maybe struggling is not right the word, but balancing as you release these episodes every week or every 2 weeks?
It is prioritizing, but also you know, access to families. You know, I've talked to other podcasters about this. It's the hardest thing. The two hardest things that we ever do are press send on an email or a message to a family member or a family spokesperson. And then the other hardest thing we ever do is press upload on an episode. Because we are reaching out to people who are currently in trauma. I don't know what the reaction's going to be. And, you know, we're sensitive people as well. And, you know, we don't want to be seen as entertainers who are, you know, vultures on your tragedy. We legitimately think that we can help. I can word it a million different ways in that body of that email. But as soon as I press send, I don't know what that person's going to think on the other side. And so that person is either going to say, they're going to respond and say no, they're not going to respond at all, or they're going to say yes. And I just have to hold my breath and think, okay, here we go. And then maybe like a week or two will go by, haven't heard from the person, I'm moving on. You know, I had one I posted in a missing persons group that I knew that the family was getting a lot of media attention, and they were, you know, because I look at them on social media and I see how their behaviors are, if they're amenable to media. And so then I posted in their missing person group, and the mother of the missing person deleted my post. Like, and I,
oh, wow.
I just, yeah. So, and then it's, you know, immediately I have to, like, I get hurt, but yeah. I can't personalize it. Mm-mm. But it's hard not to, because, you know, we're, you know, at this juncture right now, we're doing okay with the podcast, but we're not CBC.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, it's different when David Ridgen knocks on your front door and he's like, hey, it's me, David Ridgen from,
Someone
knows something. People are going to be like, come on in and have some craft dinner. But like, when it's us, it's like, hey, we're a True North True Crime. And they're like, what? So, who? You know, we're kind of, you know, it's just like, we're, you know, having said that though, you know, we've worked with, you know, Jordan Hollings' family, Marshall Awas's family, Dane Stanway's mom, Dana, like, I mean, heartbreaking. But kind people who knew that our heart was in the right place and trusted us. And oh man, like just recently, Shailene McAllister, like, it's just,
that was a heartbreaking episode.
Yeah,
it's hard, and we were like, you know, there's no information there, which is devastating. But we were like, we're making a full episode of this, and like this story completely needs to be told. So yeah.
You know, you look at that one, and you know, you look at some missing persons groups, and you see, you know, $50,000 GoFundMes and 20,000 people in their missing Facebook group. And then you look at a case like that one, and you have 700 people in a small town in a Facebook group doing the best they can to try and find someone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the cavalry is not coming. There's no $50,000 GoFundMe.
Right.
And so it's like,
how would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How do I do right by this family and help them in this very challenging situation? Or even with Dane Stanway's story, Dane Stanway was he struggled with substance misuse. He was a gangster. He did two years in prison for an assault. Like, he's not by the general standard a likable character or protagonist because of some of his behaviors, right? But he's still missing. And his mom needs answers. So I can't even remember what the question was.
No, that's there's so much I wanted to unpack there that you just said. Because I think that's something that I don't want to say I've struggled with it, but I'm definitely cognizant of where it's, you know, not. I don't want to judge anyone based on their lifestyle or their choices. If you're missing, you're missing. And I think no matter, you know, what you've done or where you come from, like, you know, you have a right to have exposure for your family to find peace and to find you, right? Like, I think I try and not, you know, look at it as like, well, this person's a better person, so, you know, they deserve to come on the show. Like, I'm really trying to look at it in a lens like, well, if you're missing, you're missing, and what can I do to help? And that's how I always approach people I want to interview. It's like, listen, my prerogative is to create a show, really humanize it, do a good job. And to do that, I need to talk to family and friends and people like yourself, you know, to do that properly. And of course, like, I won't cover a case if, you know, the mother isn't interested. You know what I mean? Like, if there's one key person that's like, no, I don't want, then it's like, okay, we like walk away. This last series, I had a couple people who were happy that I was doing the series, but didn't want to come on, you know, to talk about it. And, you know, I tried really hard to get them on because I thought they would be great and, you know, really kind of humanize Chris. But, you know, they decided that it was too emotional or whatever. They couldn't do it. And, you know, I was totally fine with that. I'm like, you know what? Thanks for even just considering it. So I try and approach it, you know, kind of like you said, like, I'm not judging. I'm just here to try and tell your loved one's story as best as I can and as accurately as I can. And, you know, the more you can tell me, the better, because that's only going to help, the narrative and the story. So, totally. Yeah, I think it's a fine balance, right? But yeah, I don't remember what the question was either. So we can move on.
Answered it in like a really roundabout way.
I think so. Yeah, I think we were talking about the challenges, and I think you highlighted a lot of them. Because it is. There are so many challenges when it comes to covering, and I keep saying missing persons. I know you cover, crimes as well, but for me, it's right now, it's been mostly missing persons. So that's been the focus. I'm wondering, since starting the podcast, what's been the most rewarding aspect of, you know, starting True North True Crime?
I think for me is just the absolute joy of being able to build an audience, no matter how big or small. Engaging with people from actually all over the world. I thought it was just going to be Canadians, but people from all over the world are tuning in, which is amazing. When we started this, I was like, we're going to get 50 listeners.
Yeah.
Like,
that's what I thought too.
No expectations. Yeah. No expectations. So the fact that we have been able to be downloaded 200,000 times is just like, it still blows my mind.
That's amazing, by the way. Congratulations. Like, that's huge and so well deserved. Yeah.
Thank you.
But then I read a tweet from Marissa the other day where she said she's at 80 million.
I saw that too.
I was like, oh.
we still had a nice meal that night and celebrated quietly together our 200,000 downloads. But,
yeah, but I think for me, it's just being able to connect with like-minded people, and also those people go on to share the people that we cover stories, and just you know, just build like a nice, compassionate audience for me is incredibly rewarding. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's a great aspect too, Kate, is that you know, when I worked in live performance, you trained an audience. If you're a good performer, they know when to laugh, they know when to cry, that kind of thing. And I'm not saying we trained our audience, but we did make sure that off of the top, every single episode, we explain we are not coming from a place of judgment. This is what we do. Like, and it's a carb. Like, we've had people reach out to us and be like, "You guys are too lefty. You guys should be more like Sword and Scale." And
well, go listen to Sword and Scale then.
That's kind of what we said. Hey, thanks for reaching out. And also, like, we have no political bias in our episodes at all, like, ever. And so, like, you know, we're just using person-centered language. That's it. You know, like, we're just trying to approach these stories with compassion. So the rewarding thing has been that because we kept on putting out those lures, the lures of kindness, the lures of understanding, that kind of thing, I feel like that's who we started bringing into our podcast as listeners. And that's, and at the same time, people who were not interested in that, they want to hear two people laughing through these stories or whatever, they go find that podcast. And that's okay too. You know, we can't please everybody, but it has been rewarding to see through reviews and comments and stuff like that. And we have gotten negative stuff, but, you know, we see the reviews and the comments and we see the positive feedback, and people are like getting us. They get what we're trying to do. And then the other thing is I will, you know, quietly creep through people's Facebook profiles, and I will see conversations from loved ones saying that they really appreciated what we did with the episode, or that tears fell when they listened to the episode we created. When we did our episode on Ben Tyner, we did not reach out to the family. It was, we tried, it didn't work out, but we wanted to go ahead with the episode anyway. We weren't told no, but we just, you know, and even with Michaela Bally, we didn't reach out to the family, but because there's just enough information out there. So, but with Ben Tyner, a high school friend of Ben's reached out to us and thanked us for humanizing his high school friend, like his childhood friend. And, wow. You know, those are the moments where Kate and I sit together and we look and we're like, I think we're on the right path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's how I felt after the Ryan series, was that when I went on iTunes or wherever I was looking at comments, people who would say, you know, not just that they enjoyed listening, but that, you know, it felt like I got to know Ryan. I was like, okay, well, I did my job then. That's all I wanted, you know. And of course there's always going to be, you know, people who didn't like it and negative stuff, but I try so hard to just ignore that, because it's, you know, I like to think it's in the minority with what I'm doing. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it is tough. I mean, that's a good question to ask too, like, you know, because like you said, it hasn't been all glowing reviews, because nothing ever is. Like, do you pay attention to the negative stuff, or is it just kind of noise for you both?
Well, let me tell you, I wish I could say absolutely no, it doesn't bother me, and I'm like, you know, woke and like look above that stuff. But no, of course it bothers me. I mean, apparently I have a monotone voice and I sound like I'm bored, and that's fine.
Jesus, wow.
Apparently she doesn't want to be there is one of the reviews.
And like, you know what?
It's harsh.
But this brings me to a good point. Being a woman in the podcast world, it's hard. For some reason, people do not like women as hosts. I don't know what it is. They have a harder time digesting, you know, female voices. They are more critical of, you know, vocal fry or the tone. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of things on Reddit or in groups looking for podcasts like, hey, can you recommend me a podcast with a male host? I hate females and all this stuff. And I'm like, whoa, like, I mean, it happens. And I think,
and I've seen it with like Marissa, with Charlie from Crime Lines, with Christy from Canadian True Crime. She, like, they all deal with it.
Yeah, it's, I think it's harder to be, I don't know what it is, but yes, of course, it's hard to ignore negative feedback. I mean, especially when it's something like, oh, this wasn't researched well, or something like that. Yeah. When it's like that, we look at each other and we're like, could we have done something better? But I think the critique is in some ways good, because it allows us to, you know, work on our sound production. I mean, we started this last year. I've never produced anything audio in my life. I worked in the film industry as an agent. I have no idea what I'm doing. I picked up GarageBand, a couple of Blue Yeti mics, and I was like, let's roll.
Yeah, if they're going to criticize Kate's voice or whatever, like what they don't know is that Kate's the one who's recording and editing everything, and I'm just sitting there vaping, waiting to say my lines, you know? Like she's working her ass off to get these episodes sounding good, and the learning curve that we've had over the past like 20 something episodes has been huge.
Yeah, I'm even afraid to go back and listen to our first episode now. I can't do it, but yeah, I think negative comments were always going to come. I said to him when we started, I'm like, look, we got to be prepared for any kind of feedback that we get, and if people have negative things to say that are maybe true, like let's not let it get to us and let's make those changes. I like negative comments sometimes. Like, I mean, when they're constructive.
That's what I was going to say. Like, if they're not constructive, then it's just noise. But, there is an element when you're first starting, I'm noticing, is the constructive ones. There hasn't been many of them, but there's been a few. Yeah. And, they are helpful. And that is my biggest fear, is getting something really wrong and being called out for it and being like, well, you're absolutely right. I got that wrong and that's on me. So, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
So no, of course. We covered a case. This one hurt a lot, this negative comment. And I'll tell you why, because we ventured a little bit. We're finding our voice, right? And we ventured a little bit out of our lane, and we covered the death of two children. And but the thing is, I made sure that we researched everything. We went through the divorce court papers. I found a UBC law review paper on that case, and I did a deep dive into, again, intimate partner violence and coercive control and stuff. And so we made sure that even with the court documents, we steered away from the more terrible details of the murder. And so we put this thing together, and I really felt that we had put together an episode that was compassionate but told the truth of the story and highlighted what the problem was. And the next day, once we uploaded it, we immediately got a comment on our Instagram from someone who was involved with it, who called us out for doing entertainment. And the thing is, that is, like, if you know us, that's not what we do. We don't do entertainment. And so it was, that one hurt. We tried to respond with like, hey, this isn't what we were doing. Like, and we explained it, but the thing is, what we needed to understand was that was their point of view at that time. They're very close to that case.
Right.
It was only 3 years ago. And maybe, had we to do it again, maybe we wouldn't have covered that. So it's a matter of like finding the right time to do certain cases too. And that feedback from that person, it hurt, and it made me, think twice for sure. Even though I still stand by what we put out, I don't know if there was a right time to ever cover that particular case.
Well, violence against kids is always going to be something that people either are able to listen to or completely unable to listen to that. And I get that. We put warnings at the beginning of it. I mean, we always put warnings, but like special warnings for like, hey, this includes violence against children.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there is a perfect way to cover a case like that. But
I think even like American podcasters can get away with it more because there's 350 million of them. Whereas, of people in the United States, whereas like with Canada, there's only 30 something million of us. So these cases are actually generally quite close to home for someone in Canada. It's not just a random shooting in Kansas or something like that. This is like, these are like, oh, you mean that case that happened in, in St. Catharines, Ontario? Yeah, I know. My cousin lives there. Like people know each other in Canada in a weird way.
And I guess that's kind of too like a bit of a disadvantage, being a Canadian podcast, and I'm assuming you're, for now just going to cover Canadian cases and content. There isn't as an extensive amount of cases as there are in the US just based on population alone. Is that something that, obviously you're just starting out and there's still a lot more cases and events to cover, but is that something that worries you about being a Canadian podcast, is maybe being limited in some of the choices you can make in terms of content?
I don't worry about it too much because I currently have probably 50 episodes written in my notes on my phone. So I like not written fully, but like just the titles of the episode. So like, I feel like there's a lot in Canada actually, which is part of the reason why we wanted to do the podcast, because, you know, it's not just Tim Hortons and politeness.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I'm like, oh, what if we run out of cases? But then I realize how impossible that would be. And I think the advantage to being a Canadian podcast is these stories haven't necessarily been told ad nauseum. You know what I mean? I think a lot of people gravitate towards American crimes because they're just a little bit more
sensationalized,
popular. But I mean, we have a lot of incredibly messed up cases in Canada that haven't really been told in the same way. So I almost think that that's an advantage. But again, the disadvantage is Americans might not care as much to listen to Canadian stories.
Yeah, and I think that's probably part of the balancing act of being a Canadian podcast is, you know, you want to draw in those U.S. listeners as well. But like you said, I think there are a lot of Canadian cases that do interest a U.S. audience, especially mm-hmm. in the Pacific Northwest. You know, there seems to be a lot of intrigue around that. We're getting near the end here, but I have to ask this question because I'm curious, as a couple who started a podcast, what has that been like in terms of just, you know, I'm sure it's been challenging at times. You two seem to get along still. You know, has it been difficult at times? I mean, we're, you know, working so closely together and, you know, it's not like you're dealing with really light content either. You're dealing with very heavy subject matter. So I'm wondering if you can tell me about, you know, what that's been like the last year or so.
Yeah, I mean, I still work 12 hours a day from home at my film industry job. Graham is not currently working full time.
Mm-hmm.
Love you so much.
Yeah.
So he actually does most of all of the writing and the research, and I just kind of sit down, record, and edit. So that's been nice. There have of course any time a podcaster has a real job and then this job that they come home to, it's not even just a hobby. This is a full-time job. And I think that people don't realize how much time a podcast takes. They're like, I'm going to start a podcast. It'll be easy. And then you sit down and you're like, oh my God, this is a lot of work. I have no idea what I'm doing. And like the research alone takes days. The writing takes days. And then the record and edit process for us is like at least 8 hours. So I think for me, it's just been like, I don't have time to record today. And then, you know, he gets upset because he wants to record. And I'm like, I just can't. So that's been like the only kind of rift. I mean, I think we've done a really good job of saying, maybe not today. Let's do this. You know, we do it on the weekends primarily is when we record. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think we get along well.
Yeah, I think, you know, at first we weren't sure how to delegate the work.
Mm-hmm.
And then we began, you know, because Kate wrote a couple of the first episodes. We co-wrote two of the first episodes. And then the film industry came back for Kate's side of the business, not so much for mine. So I had more time. And so I just kind of fell into that research writing mode, which is okay, because I actually really like that. It's interesting as a couple, though, because we will be, you know, getting dinner ready or or feeding the cats. And then I'll just be like, hey, I'm thinking about covering this case of a missing person from Prince George. And I'll just like start talking about the case and what I've learned so far. And then Kate kind of gives me a nod or lets me know, like, you know, well, what about this or what, you know, what are we trying to show with that case or what are we what's the message we're trying to get across? Like, you know, I might want to cover, you know, the case of a violent crime that happened in Ontario. But the reason why I want to cover it is because the person only got 7 years. You know, that's like the sentencing is really what I want to talk about. So we just kind of not debate, but we discuss back and forth as to like which cases we do cover. So that's been split relatively evenly, or at least I make sure I get the okay from Kate before I dive headlong into a case.
I think at the beginning of the pandemic it gave us something to do together, like a creative, like, God, last year was really hard. We spent a lot of time in the apartment doing absolutely nothing and just staring at each other being like, are we gonna die? You know, like what's happening? And then all of a sudden we got this creative project that we could work on together, and it was super healthy. And it's still healthy. I mean, obviously we're busier now with it, and with work and stuff. So it's just been a learning curve on how to balance life and then also a podcast.
Yeah. And the other thing too is being able to have that, because we are dealing with, like, you know, challenging subject matter or whatever, and we can sort of debrief that together. The other night I was finishing up a script and you know, and Kate came in the office and she's like, you know, you okay? And I'm like, I'm actually kind of really upset about what I just made. And she's like, well, why, you know? And I said, well, you know, this really random act of kindness came out of this horrible, horrible case. And I just want to talk about it. And then we just talked about it. And then we, you know, at least I had her to sort of debrief with about, yeah, like the emotions I was feeling from having written, you know, this horrendous, like, real life situation that people are going through. Right.
Yeah. I feel like that might be something that single host podcasters don't really get to do. Like, they're kind of stuck with this. There is after trauma. I don't think audiences necessarily realize that. Like, the secondhand trauma that podcast hosts go through, I mean, we have to talk to actual human beings that are ripped to shreds by this horrible traumatic event that happened in their life, and their lives are flipped upside down, and we have to talk to them and, you know, make sure we're telling their stories in a compassionate, factual way. But, you know, you're hearing this mother crying on the phone. She's like, I'm really sorry. I'm really emotional. And you're like, please don't say sorry. And we have to sit with that at the end of the day. And, you know, we have all, Graham is researching until 4 a.m. next to me in bed sometimes, because he's just deep into court documents and whatnot. And he's reading horrible, gruesome stories of murder. And there's only so much of that you can take before you're like, I think this might be impacting me mentally.
Yeah. And that's what, yeah. And that's, so that's like the, definitely a positive of being a couple who work on this together. And then the, you know, the one other thing I will say is, like, with regards to the workload, one day I just woke up and decided that we release every 2 weeks, right? That was a schedule that we agreed upon that was doable. That way, if we got busy with life, we still thought we could keep up with the every 2 weeks thing. And then randomly I woke up and I'm like, I'm going to start doing TNT shorts. We're going to release an episode every week. And, you know, like, there, you know, I literally doubled our workload without really talking about it. I'm like, this is just something I'm going to do. Here's the positives. And
it's 8 minutes long. It'll be fine.
It'll be fine. And now it's like every weekend we're like, let's go for a hike. And I'm like, well, we got to record. You know? So, you know, it's like, you know, two brains working at the same time on this podcast can sometimes overcomplicate things, like I did with TNTC shorts. But I still stand by it.
Well, I think it's great. I love the shorts and I love the full length episodes. Yeah. And I think weekly is obviously, if you can do it, is the way to go. I've been kind of doing weekly with these interlude interviews leading up to season two. And I'm like, I don't think I'll be doing this again, because it's a lot more work than it's always a lot more work than you think it's going to be until you start doing it. And you're like, oh yeah, this is, you know, this is a lot. But, I absolutely love it. I love the podcast, and I want to thank you both so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure chatting with you, and I can't wait to see, you know, what you cover and what you do in the future.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for listening to True North True Crime.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with the hosts of the True North True Crime podcast. You can check out their podcast at the link in the description. If you haven't checked out my Patreon page, please do, and consider supporting the podcast. If you're already supporting me, thank you. As always, thanks for listening to the Missing and Unexplained podcast with me, Tyler Hooper.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.